RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation, the industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit thetford.com.
And by Cabela's. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com and make sure your next great camping trip is one for the record books.
And by Campgrounds of America. To find out what's behind the yellow sign, visit KOA.com or download the free KOA app today.
And by Outdoorsy. The largest and most trusted rental marketplace, Outdoorsy is making it safe and easy to make money renting your RV with full insurance, roadside assistance, secure payments, and real people ratings and reviews. Visit Outdoorsy.co to find a cool RV to rent or see how much money you can earn renting your RV today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are bringing you the next travel episode from our epic Pacific Northwest adventure. We spent almost a month touring Washington, Oregon, and Northern California, and can't wait to share all the highlights and recommendations from our trip.
This week, we are talking about Mount St. Helens, which emerged as a surprise highlight of the trip. We figured we would snap a couple of pics of the volcano and be done with it. But this destination is an amazing stop for a family road trip.
You might think you've seen enough documentaries on Mount St. Helens to last a lifetime, but we know this natural wonder will knock your socks off. You are listening to episode number 153, Greetings from Mount St. Helens.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, Greetings from Mount St. Helens, it's time for our RV News Minute, which is sponsored by Jayco.
The North Point Luxury Fifth Wheel is an impressive blend of features that make for a camping experience that has something for everyone. Backed by Jayco's 2-year limited warranty, the North Point is the perfect choice for those seeking a chance to escape it all. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
Now, apparently there's a lot of people having generations of family fun on their seasonal camping sites, right? So for this week's RV News Minute, we just wanted to talk about a press release put out by RVIA about park models. So park model shipments grew 23.9% in May from last May. That's almost 24. Let's just say it's 24%.
Growth. It's almost 24%. Good point, Jeremy.
English teacher math. It's a shocking discovery.
We're going to round that one up.
That's like explosive growth, right?
Right.
I mean, that's really awesome growth. So, Stephanie, what do you think's going on with park models? Is it just following this general explosion of sales in the RV industry, or is there something particular happening here?
I felt like the universe sort of timed this press release really well, because we actually did our podcast, The Rise of the Park Model, on episode 51, almost in the same week that this showed up.
So the podcast was almost prophetic.
Yeah.
In that sense.
But we know that this is all the rage, and we know that both seasonal camping has gotten more popular. And the thing is once people experience seasonal camping in their own rig, I think a lot of the time they see the park models there at seasonal campgrounds. They go, hey, we're spending so much time here. These new park models are so comfortable. They're so airy, right? They have very tall ceilings, so they feel a lot more residential. And also the price point, I think, is more affordable than a lot of people realize when they start to go shopping.
Yeah, I think two other things are going on too. You just mentioned one of them. The park models are getting really, really nice. I mean, they are like second homes. I mean, mm-hmm. We stayed in a park model actually on this leg of the trip. We'll be talking about it on Campground of the Week this week. It was incredibly comfortable. It was more comfortable than your average RV for sure. So the park models are getting nicer, but also the campgrounds that offer seasonal sites, I think, are getting nicer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're getting more of the resort-style RV campgrounds that are offering the seasonal sites. The world of the trailer park is, I don't know, I think it's slowly vanishing.
Right. So year-to-date, the press release announced, the park model segment grew 12.3% with 1,835 units shipped compared with 1,000. 1,634 a year ago. So, and Florida and California led the sector in May with 34 units.
And those aren't huge numbers when compared to how many travel trailers are sold or how many motorhomes are sold. It's still a smaller segment of the industry for sure, but seems to be growing.
But it's a growing one, and the data backs that up. All right, so that is our RV News Minute for the week.
And we also need to remind everybody that we're pairing our episodes again this week. So RVFTA this week is greetings from Mount St. Helens, and we're really excited to talk about that leg of our trip. It was so much better than we expected. And then Campground of the Week, we're going to be reviewing the campground we stayed at the base of Mount St. Helens, the Silver Cove RV Resort, and it was awesome. Okay, so you want to listen to both of these episodes together. They are a combined set of
episodes. It's episode number 92 over there on Campground of the Week.
Okay, so we're going to come back in a second. We're going to do segment one of our Mount St. Helens episode. We're going to give you 10 interesting facts about Mount St. Helens because, frankly, Mount St. Helens is interesting. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment one of our big greetings from Mount St. Helens episode. We're going to go through 10 interesting facts about Mount St. Helens. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Campgrounds of America.
Well, we happened to personally renew our Value Card Rewards membership last month while we were on the road. And we got some firsthand appreciation for this new coupon thing that is part of your membership with KOA, the Value Card Rewards Program. We talked about it before, but last week...
Then we got it in the mail. They sent a booklet of coupons. Yeah. And let me tell you, those coupons were no joke.
Right.
As somebody said on our Facebook group, pizza coupons, done.
Done.
Okay, like sold.
Yeah, and then another person brought up the shoe coupons. Like, so these are very useful coupons. Dick's Sporting Goods, Hobby Lobby, Michael's, Harbor Freight Tools. That's just a couple of the ones that I felt like were so applicable to anyone, no matter where they live in the country.
And KOA is smart. I mean, the coupons are for companies that fit the KOA customer, right? I mean, sporting goods, outdoor stuff, tools.
Yeah, but it's also all the other stuff too, like pizza. So now you can also access those coupons through the KOA app while you're traveling. So I know that for me, I'm not going to like clip coupons before I go on a trip. But if I'm somewhere else and I need to, say, get a new pair of shoes for my kid or order pizza out, I can go into the KOA app and I can actually access coupons that are applicable for the area that I'm in, which is honestly, I think, a pretty cool.
Pretty
I'm
handy.
Not good at coupons. I'm always the one who forgets the coupon.
It's a great leap forward.
I
for
feel
coupons.
Like I need to get with the program on coupons and use my VKR membership.
All right, so download the free KOA app today, and to find out what's behind the yellow sign, visit KOA.com. Now let's talk about 10 interesting facts about Mount St. Helens. And it was this freak occurrence. I mean, it is just fascinating to think about what happened and how it happened. So, Stephanie, do you want to alternate interesting facts? And I'll start with the first one, or do you want to start?
Okay. Yes, sure. Go ahead.
We don't have to do it that way.
That's fine.
Interesting fact number one. The modern name, Mount St. Helens, was given to the volcanic peak in 1792 by Captain George Vancouver of the British Royal Navy, those Brits naming our mountains. And he was a seafarer and explorer. He named it in honor of a fellow countryman, Alain Fitzherbert, a guy, who held the title Baron St. Helens. So Fitzherbert at the time served as the British ambassador to Spain. And this guy Vancouver also named three other volcanoes in the Cascade Range. He named Mount Baker, which we saw was beautiful. We didn't get too close to it. Mount Hood and Mount Rainier.
Yeah, so Mount Baker is in the Cascades, in Cascades National Park, which we didn't actually get to. But that was something that was really new for us, that experience of feeling like no matter where we were driving in Washington and Oregon on our trip, like there'd be the snow-capped mountain in the distance. And we were honestly, I was having to look up in the map a lot because I was like, wait, which one are we looking at now? So we got better at identifying them by the end of our trip. But when we first were looking, we're like, which one is that?
And little did we know they were all named by a crazy Brit.
We didn't know that. So now we do. And now you do too. Now what's our second fact? All right. So on Sunday, May 18th, 1980, a 5.1 magnitude earthquake erupted and it triggered the eruption and massive landslide, which is one of the largest landslides on record in history.
So in one sense, it was a long time ago. In another sense, it was just yesterday. Right? This is modern history here.
I'm sure most people who are listening to this podcast right now remember, right? You remember it. You remember sort of knowing about it in your childhood. It's a faint memory.
If you were there, I bet you really remember it.
You were there. You really remember.
Run!
And I think that because it was something that happened sort of in my lifetime, and you just kind of grow up knowing Mount St. Helens erupted, I didn't have, like, I kind of felt like I knew about it and I wouldn't be awed.
It was like a little schoolboy or schoolgirl fact from a history
book. Yeah. And I just didn't know that I'd be awed by the experience. And I kind of felt like I knew about it and I had seen pictures. So learning, though, being there and actually looking through the different things that we'll talk about later on this podcast, watching the landslide on some of the video footage they had and everything, the mudslide, that was unbelievable.
It was frightening, frankly.
I mean,
some of the eyewitness video footage, yeah. I was scared to have like Wes say it.
Right.
Because it's frightening.
It was like, whoa, this was really intense. And it was far more intense than I think anything I'd ever seen maybe on like National Geographic or something in the past.
Absolutely. Okay. Interesting fact number three. 1,300 feet of mountaintop collapsed into the Toutle River Valley. So Mount St. Helens was over 9,600 feet, which is a pretty big mountain. And then after the eruption, and now currently, it's 8,366 feet, okay? That's a lot of mountain that fell off.
And again, that's something that doesn't translate in the pictures. So because I'd seen so many photos of Mount St. Helens, I kind of felt like I would just know it. Like when you see it, it's not going to be any different. Seeing it in person and seeing that hole, right? That crater, that side of the mountain that pretty much collapsed and went down in this huge landslide. It really was amazing. It's like a half a mountain to look at.
You're so right. And even when you're far away, but looking at the mountain, you don't get the sense of it just collapsing into itself. But when you get up onto like the observatory or you do the hike that we did, you look at it and you go, oh my God, I can picture it happening. You can see the place where it just all collapsed.
And you see the difference between that and all of the other mountains that we see. You know, there's nothing else that looks quite like that right now. So it was really, really phenomenal. All right. So number four, the eruption at Mount St. Helens claimed 57 lives and devastated almost 150,000 acres of state, national, and privately owned land. And I have to say that some of the most touching stories from the survivors of this, it really was about the privately owned land, because it never really struck me that there was like a retreat, like a hotel.
A lakeside retreat. Mm-hmm. And you see the pictures. It was a gorgeous lake.
Right. And this family had run it for a couple of decades, you know, or a few decades. And it was their business. It was their family business. And they had to evacuate in the weeks leading up to the eruption. And they lost everything.
And, you know, whatever the insurance was, it's almost irrelevant.
That's not the point.
It's not the point, because the landscape was altered.
Right.
I mean, the lake's not that, one lake's just like not there anymore.
Right. And you would think, okay, well, some people have fires and a family, you know, business or something, but this just is so different to see that something that you grew up, like imagine the daughter of maybe the parents that founded that lakeside retreat, right? And they grow up and they take it over and they're running it. Like your whole life, your childhood is pictured one way, your business is pictured one way, and then that disappears.
And then in its place,
and it looks like the moon.
Bizarre moonscape,
yeah. Yeah.
Right? Which, I mean, is becoming beautiful again. It has become beautiful again, but it's taken a long time.
But those personal, I have to say that those stories of the privately, you know, held land were very touching to me in a way that was unexpected.
Absolutely. And the company that was most affected was the Weyerhaeuser Company, a big logging company. And I sourced some of these facts from their site because they do a lot of education about the site now. All right. So interesting fact number five, and this is freaky weird to me. Like this doesn't seem real to me, but it is. The volcanic ash cloud drifted east across the United States in 3 days, and it encircled the Earth in 15 days. I met somebody from Seattle when we were hanging at Mount St. Helens, and they said that they did not see the volcanic ash when it happened, but they saw it when it came back around the planet.
Right, because it was going east, actually, so which is ironic. So in other words, people in Europe actually experienced the ash more heavily before
than somebody on the coast of Washington.
Exactly, exactly. But it's just phenomenal that it was such a, you know, it was such an environmental event, you know, around the world.
A planetary event.
Yeah. All right. So number six, the landscape devastated by the eruption has evolved into a rich and diverse habitat for plants and animals as witnessed firsthand on our Hummocks Trail hike, which we'll talk more about later. Now, this is a very important fact that we learned when we were there. Scientists did not know what was going to happen in this place. And
life would reemerge or not reemerge.
Or how long it would take. So one of the most interesting things that we learned here was that, you know, as the scientists were sort of like taking their samples and everything in the days right after this eruption, you know, people are looking at this moonscape and thinking like, wow, look at this change. They found evidence of regrowth. And it crazy, this firegrass, I think it was, or something like that, close to that, called something like firegrass, 14 days after the eruption. 14 days! And they were blown away. They couldn't believe it.
Scientifically, I could be wrong here, but I think I read that there was life under the snow, some of the snowpack that was sort of protected.
It was protected, yeah.
And that then reemerged way more quickly than anybody saw.
So scientists were just able to study the sort of impact of this kind of environmental, you know, a disaster in a way that they've never been able to do it before.
And that area around the Hummocks Trail is that whole area. They are not... They did not reinsert or replant trees. They let that area come back. The National Monument area, which has been designated a National Volcanic Monument, has been left to come back naturally. It's like a living laboratory for scientists.
Right, and that's what they're treating it like. They are literally letting it be so they can see how nature does this on its own.
But yeah, you get to go hiking there, which is awesome. So we'll come back to that hike in another segment. All right, so number seven. Within 15 minutes, a vertical plume of volcanic ash rose over 80,000 feet into the sky.
Yeah, facts like that, I don't even know what to do with that. Like 80,000 feet, that's really high.
That's just high. That's like if you were up that high, I'd be scared if I was up that high.
All right, number eight. On the afternoon of May 18th, 1980, a dense ash cloud turned daylight into darkness in eastern Washington, causing streetlights to turn on in Yakima and Ritzville. So the streetlights turned on in the middle of the day.
Because it was like night. Mm-hmm. And when you see some of that eyewitness footage, like from that one reporter, you see a pinhole of light off in the distance that he's trying to reach. Mm-hmm. And then the video footage goes black.
Yeah.
And he's like saying, like, I'm in hell. Like, I'm going to die. I'm in hell.
He was rescued.
He
was rescued, thankfully.
Brave reporter.
Because otherwise it would have...
Or crazy reporter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's an important thing to remember, is that the people who were there reporting on it, not that they knew what it would be like, but they were given warnings that they were, like, at their own risk being there, because scientists knew that an eruption was inevitable when it happened.
Number nine. It was the most economically destructive event in U.S. history. I don't know who does the research to find out like how economically destructive an event is, but I guess it's because it just destroyed in a great distance away from the mountain. Things were also trashed and destroyed by volcanic ash.
Well, that's the thing, is volcanic ash has an environmental impact around the world. So there's other ways that it impacts besides just the local
economics.
I think
of something like 9/11. And, of course, there's incredible economic devastation, of course, emotional devastation. But I guess it was contained to an area to some degree where, like, this spread around the planet, which is wild to think about.
All right, number 10. A huge part of the devastated area, 110,000 acres, became part of the Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument, which was established by Congress in August of 1982. So about 2 years after the event, it became one of our national monuments. So,
and I'm so glad it did.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so glad it did, because it's one of the most amazing places in the world.
And I want to, you know, kind of circle back to the fact that we were stopping here because it seemed like a nice place to stop on our journey south, right? Like, we were leaving the Olympic Peninsula.
It's just something you do. You stop at Mount St. Helens, yeah. and you look.
Right. You're like, okay, well, we're not going to drive right by Mount St. Helens. Let's stop there. There's a Great Highway West property there. So we'll stop. We'll stay at the Silver Cove RV Resort. We'll see Mount St. Helens. And it was very much like, we were like, oh, yeah, we'll go take a few pictures. I thought we'd look at it and be like, wow, there's Mount St. Helens. And I have to say that being there was a miraculous, like, experience for me. Like, to see all of this education and footage compiled in a couple of places and to really look at what nature has done and how, you know, nature works. And the videos that they did were incredibly educational, not just fluffy like we talked about last week at some of the MPS sites that they have. And I was in awe of the world when we were at Mount St. Helens in a way that I wouldn't say was true at almost any other national park that I've ever been at.
Great, great summary, Stephanie. And I have to just echo your sentiment that the educational materials and presentations and videos enriched the experience for me far more than it did at say, Olympic National Park. And the other thing is just the area is vast. There's a lot to do around there because you're talking about a gigantic, gigantic area. So we're going to come back in two segments. And segment two, or the first of the two segments, we're going to talk about the west side, okay? Because in terms of visiting, they break it down into the things you can do on different sides. So the west side is kind of the main side with a lot of the most famous things you can do. And then we're going to come back for another segment on the south side. And I really think that we nailed this and we did visit the best things you could visit in 2 or 3 days. And we hope it'll help you plan a great trip to Mount St. Helens. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment two of our big episode, Greetings from Mount St. Helens. We're going to talk about all the cool things that we did on the west side based off of Route 504. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Outdoorsy. And why not, like, rent an RV from Outdoorsy and go check out Mount St. Helens?
Well, yeah, you've got options for yourself out there in Washington. So Outdoorsy is the largest and most trusted RV rental marketplace, and they are making it easy to make a little scratch renting out your RV. You have a lot of options for renting your RV, but there are things that make Outdoorsy different.
Like what?
There's a lot of things that make Outdoorsy different. They have the first of all, the $1 million insurance policy that covers owners. And they also have roadside assistance, automatic DMV background checks. And we also love the owner support, like the checklists for pre-arrival, departure, and return. They have an owners only Facebook group where you can talk about, you know, you can talk with other owners about, you know, just best practices for renting out your RV, get tips and tricks for generating maybe more rentals. So it really is a community type of experience.
And I have to say, somebody on our Facebook group said they signed because of the, you know, these ads, they signed up for Outdoorsy and they have been paying their monthly payment on the RV. And then some.
I love that. I love that somebody who's willing to do that. Like, some people are like, I don't want to rent my RV. It's mine. Well, but you know what? If somebody's like, I want an RV as a utilitarian thing so I can travel with my family, but I don't necessarily have the money for it, I can pay that bill through renting it. That's such a great
you can
game
pay
plan.
The bill. You could also turn it into a business. Yeah. Now, guess what? I did a little Outdoorsy search last night.
Did you?
Yeah, I was on the website. Do you know what I searched for? I just put in San Francisco, and I just wanted to see, like, what were Outdoorsy options for San Francisco. There was a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, there were tiny little teardrops. There were lots of, like, Class B motorhomes. There were vans that had been turned into rentals. There were Class Cs. And you could kind of take your pick for a San Francisco Outdoorsy adventure. So check out outdoorsy.co/listyourRV for more information today. Okay, Steph, let's talk about the west side of Mount St. Helens, State Route 504, and all of the things that we did there. Now, the main, what I would call the main visitor center is way at the bottom, an hour away from the Johnston Observatory, but we would recommend starting there at the Mount St. Helens Visitor Center at Silver Lake. So why should our listeners start there, even though the main event is way up at the top?
Yeah, you can. And you can talk with a ranger there. We actually did stop and talk with the ranger there, who just confirmed the hike that we had already planned on taking at the Hummocks, you know, the Hummocks Trail.
I like getting that confirmation, though. When
but
we
it was
say,
good.
Oh, we were thinking of doing the Hummocks Trail. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's the hike mm-hmm. for your family. You know, then she's like, okay, I feel really good that we're picking the right thing to do today.
Now, I want to forewarn everybody that there is a paid exhibit there. This is not a national park visitor center. Mount St. Helens is a funny, like, conglomeration of a state-run, you know, state parks. But then they're in partnership with the National Forest. They're in partnership with the national park. So our national parks pass did get us in to the Johnston Observatory and did get us into many
places.
Got us
into everything.
Right. But it wouldn't have gotten us into this exhibit at this main visitor center.
And we were hyped up to go hiking.
Right. We didn't want to pay that. So just know that if you're not going to pay for the exhibit, you don't want to shop at the gift shop, and you don't really need to talk to a ranger, I think that you could skip
because there's nothing scenic right there. And if you're camping at Silver Cove, you're going to get to experience Silver Lake. It's not like you're going to experience Silver Lake, which is very pretty, by going to this visitor center. So I think you make a fair point that you could get your gifts up at the top at the observatory.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. You could. Now, I also want to say we're going to talk about the Forest Learning Center as our first stop. So what we did was we went to the Mount St. Helens Visitor Center. Then we went to the Forest Center. Then we hiked the Hummocks Trail. Then we went to the Johnston Observatory. All up this road, right? As you go along. I have to say, in retrospect, I don't know if I changed the order that we did things in.
Oh, tell me. You didn't mention this. I'm curious because I thought it was fine. But
tell me. So I think that I would have done I would have gone up to the top. Right?
Okay.
And done like the movie up there at the Johnston Observatory was fantastic. So I think that I would have gone up to the top. Then
I just disagree.
You're looking at me like
I disagree.
Okay.
I mean, I get your perspective. I loved learning a bit at the Forest Learning Center, mm-hmm. stretching our legs, doing a really nice hike, and then chilling out at the Johnston Observatory. And then at the Johnston Observatory, you get those killer, more up close views, which sort of serve as like to me like a grand finale for the day.
Okay. So I just want to. That's fine. My point being is we were very happy with the way we did things, but this is what I want to say. There are tons of programs and everything up at the Johnston Observatory. There's ranger programs. They have talks. We were so beat by the time we got up there because we really had a long day and we had had such a full, wonderful day that by the time we got up there at 4 o'clock, we weren't going to do anything but watch the movie and see the views. Whereas if we had been there earlier in the day, we might have had a ranger talk or something. But
now I say I'm coming around to your opinion a little bit more because I was actually disappointed we didn't get to do a ranger program.
They looked really good.
We had hiked like 3 miles. The boys were toast.
Yeah.
And they weren't going to sit through a ranger program at that point. And the ranger programs looked awesome, right?
Okay.
Like, I'm sad we missed that.
So I just want you to think about that. Think about a packed lunch and where you would fit that in along with your day. There are different ways you can do that. Obviously, you could start off with the hike and then go to the centers. All of these are wonderful options. There's a lot of different ways you could arrange them in your day, no matter what. You do not want to have to search for food. There is a hot dog truck outside the Johnston Observatory. You don't want to have to eat there. Pack a lunch on this day.
Yeah. So we packed a lot into one day, really, if you think about it. We did the Mount St. Helens Visitor Center. Then we did the Forest Learning Center. Then we did the Hummocks Trail hike. Then we did the Johnston Observatory. And then we caught dinner on the way back down. So let's talk a little bit more mm-hmm. about each of those things. Let's go into a bit of detail about each. So you loved the Forest Learning Center. I mean, what were some of the things you loved about that? Why should our listeners not miss that?
You almost made us drive right by there.
I totally did.
And I was like, no, I want to stop and see.
Because I wanted to get to the hike.
So this place is so cool. Very unusual. Now, this Forest Learning Center is free admittance. It is run by the Weyerhaeuser logging company. Now, this is a logging company that was there in the area prior to the eruption. Then what happened was after the eruption, they decided we're going to double down, we're going to regrow, and we're going to work side by side with the national park in sort of almost like the scientific endeavor of seeing what happens both when you replant areas and when you let them grow back naturally. So this logging company, obviously it's an economic endeavor. This is a business.
Might have been why I was like suspicious of going there, yeah. That it was going to be like logging industry propaganda. And it wasn't. It was really, truly. And in fact, some of the exhibits were much better than the Johnson Observatory. There were more exhibits, frankly.
The exhibits were awesome. And I understand that their goal is to make you feel good about logging. I get that. Go in with your eyes wide open because they've done a fantastic job at it. It was educational. They had a kids' room where there was a gentleman there who taught our boys. He was so interactive with all the kids. He'd be like, oh, here's the equipment that loggers use. And they were showing them everything. He taught us about undergrowth. And you know how these rows are planted. We learned so much in that little kids center about a world we didn't know much about at all.
You pinpointed a major part of the experience up there. I just want to highlight this. You get to see what the forest looks like that has been regrown by Weyerhaeuser, and then you get to see this freak moonscape that was just left to naturally mm-hmm. regrow. And so there's two radically different landscapes that can be explored. I think even sometimes in the same hike, not the one we did. That was all of the moonscape, as it were. But there's two incredibly diverse environments up there. And when you see the land that's been reforested where they have regrown the trees, it almost messes with your eyes to see these lines of perfect trees, right? Your eyes almost start to get like frazzled looking at them.
Now, they also had here a video that was some of the best video footage that we saw the entire time we were there.
In the eruption chamber.
Yes.
So it's like they're giving you the experience of being in the eruption.
It kind of did that whole like inside your body shaking a little and everything.
Wesley was a little scared.
It was very intense because they had that, like you were talking about the reporting, and it was just these like real time experiences of people that were in it. Also, this was where we saw some of the things I talked about earlier in the first segment of the survivor stories and really how touching they were. That was one of the most emotional moments that we had during this trip did happen at this forestry center for me. I was just really impressed.
There was information on the eruption and the aftershock than up at the Johnson Observatory, which was more comprehensive about the mountain. I think.
So I really enjoyed this place. I put this as a must visit on your trip. I think it was awesome and it was free. So there is no reason to drive by. Now we ended up having our picnic lunch here. There's some tables there. And then there's also a really nice view over, I think it's Elk Meadow.
And you're not as close to Mount St. Helens as you are up at the Johnson Observatory. So it's not as grand of a view. Still a very nice view.
Yeah, but they have some nice wildlife viewing and everything.
In retrospect, what we did in one day, you could certainly do in 2 days. Mm-hmm. You could
get more out of it if you did it in 2 days, definitely.
You could do the Forest Learning Center in a hike one day, and then the Johnson Observatory in another hike another day.
Yeah, and then you could squeeze some ranger programs in there, which I think would be really valuable.
Now, let's talk about the hike. The Hummocks Trail was a spectacular family hike. I still like Hurricane Hill and Olympic National Park a little bit more, and Stephanie hates how I have to rank things, but this was a top five favorite family hike. It was a 2.5-mile loop trail, and it's in between the Forest Learning Center and the Johnston Ridge Observatory. It was very easy to find the trailhead. There were a couple places on the trail where it was not marked, and we weren't certain which way to turn, so just look at maps carefully. We went down the wrong way. We thought we did, but we didn't.
Fine. I just started second guessing myself.
There's a few turns and you're like, is this the trail or not the trail? They're not marked.
Exactly. There was not really great. What happened was there was a few turnoffs that weren't actual trails, but they tripped me up because they looked enough like trails that I was like,
And you're not going to get dangerously lost up there. You just might take a little bit of a wrong turn. Now, it's the perfect balance between a day hike and like an easy hike for someone like Wes. It's long and takes in a lot of different landscapes and types of views. those, but it's not a lot of rigorous elevation or up and down. It's a relatively flat loop hike trail.
And you get beautiful views of Mount St. Helens for so much of it.
Shocking.
So, yeah, like you're like, whoa.
You're like, yeah, and you're hiking through some forest and you can't see anything. And then you emerge and you're like, oh my God, you know, there it is. And there's like a huge field of wildflowers leading up to the mountain. The wildflowers on the, even if Mount St. Helens wasn't there, like just say the mountain wasn't there, this would be a crazy awesome hike because the wildflowers were amazing and we caught them perfectly in bloom.
Yeah, without any knowledge on our part, we ended up being peak wildflower season. So I think that that was definitely a big part of the experience. Also, there's like some of these sort of boggy, wetlandy almost areas along this trail that shows a lot of what's happening in this regrowth and how the water is forming and how a lot of different diversity is being introduced in this area. And something that we learned was that we're watching a young ecosystem. So what you're going to have more diversity in a young ecosystem. And another, a film that we watched explained how as the forest grows and gets older, you're actually going to have less, you know, diversity within that ecosystem. So right now it's like just going crazy as all these different, you know, smaller creatures and different smaller plants are able to emerge in this area.
And by the way, please go over and look at our Instagram because we have photos of everything we're talking about. And I did like a 10 picture, Steffi and I put together like a 10 picture slideshow that illustrates all the different things on this hike, all the different experiences. Now the hummocks themselves, and this freaks me out. Like I almost feel like I'm getting this wrong because it's so weird. The hummocks are like mounds that blew off the mountain.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Scientists know where they – I know. It's weird to me.
I was telling the boys that the whole time. I was like, you guys. I said, that's the mountain. Do you realize? And I kept telling them that. You were taking pictures the whole time, so you probably didn't hear a lot of this conversation. I was like, guys, look at that mountain. That piece – flew off that mountain to here. And you can tell the mountain pieces and then just
and
lying.
The scientists know where they, what parts of the mountain they came from.
It's like a jigsaw puzzle, really.
It's
like
it's
they can
wacky.
Like put it back together.
So this combination of gorgeous wildflowers, views of Mount St. Helens, and this somewhat alien moonscape really made for a hike that you're not going to get anywhere else.
No, you're
on
not.
The planet,
it's so unique.
Think.
I felt like I had this amazingly unique experience in my life, which was unexpected and really magical.
Lots of wildlife. Now, you can see elk. We didn't. We saw lots of waterfowl, lots of birds, lots of frogs, lots of newts. We saw all of that stuff, right? So keep your eye open for little critters along the way. Now, after the hike, we went to the Johnston Ridge Observatory, which you have to visit. It's open mid-May through October. We got it. You have to pay a fee to get in, as Stephanie mentioned, but we got in for free with our national pass.
You get to go in fast, too, with your national pass.
That's true.
Park
there was
pass.
A long line.
There's a long line to pay the daily fee, but there's a person there checking.
It is. Ours expires in like a couple days, renewing that immediately.
Yep.
There's an excellent 16-minute movie with a stunning ending, and I'm not going to tell you what
I'm
not giving it away, but
surprise.
The ending, somebody told me at the bottom, it was like, oh, it's a real surprise ending.
It was.
It totally shocks
and everybody claps and it's fun.
Okay. Like Stephanie mentioned, Ranger Talks, a gift store. Now the gift store was stinking awesome. And do you want to know why I think it was such an awesome gift store?
You think every gift store is an awesome
gift store. It's not a national park gift store. It's not an NPS gift store. It's a national forest gift store. So guess what kind of gifts they had that I've never seen anywhere else?
Smokey
the Bear. They had Smokey the Bear magnets. They had Smokey the Bear t-shirts. They had Smokey the Bear puzzles. They had Smokey the Bear stuffed animals.
Yeah.
And guess who bought one? Wesley.
Wesley's like, Wesley by way of daddy.
Wesley's like, Daddy, can I get a Smokey the Bear lovey? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, no brainer.
I'm like, Wes, thanks for asking.
This is why Wes always wants to hang out with you.
Because I want one, but I don't want anyone to know that I want one. So there's just all this cool Smokey the Bear stuff up there, which I've never seen in an NPS gift
They
store.
Also have a big relief map, you know, of the volcano and the areas. They have a lot of interactive things within that sort of gift shoppy area. I feel like it's a really nice observation center. There's a short There's a few short little hikes that you can do right up there from the observation. There's a ridge hike that will go along the edge of it. So if, you know, depending on how you schedule your days, if you do start up there, you can do a hike while you're up there.
And if you're traveling with somebody that's handicapped or older, they can get the most stunning view of Mount St. Helens.
Oh, it's
easily.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there are accessibility. And there's accessible trails there,
too. You can get crazy photos and, like, the gift shop and the bathroom's right behind you.
Yeah.
The other thing I would mention, and this surprised me about a lot of, of things that we saw in the Pacific Northwest, there were lots of RVs that drove straight to the top and parked at the Johnston Ridge Observatory. That's a personal decision on your part if you want to drive your RV up there. But I just wanted to say plenty of people do. It's not a white-knuckle drive up to the top. And there was a fair amount of RV parking. I didn't see anyone struggling to get RV parking. Hypothetically, I guess you could drive up there on a real busy day and not find a spot. And then what do you do? I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't do it on a Saturday for sure.
We would never do anything like that on
but
a Saturday.
On
but
a
we
Monday
were there.
Friday, there are people eating lunch in their Class C's in the parking lot.
Right. We were there over 4th of July weekend, you know, in that time frame.
But I don't think we were there
on the
weekend itself.
Right. But like in that time period. So, and it was doable. So I couldn't say how the crowds are at other times.
And it shocked me the number of people in the Pacific Northwest that were traveling with motorhomes and not towing cars, that they were just parking everywhere, whether it be a restaurant or a national park or whatever. And it really got me thinking about going out west in a motorhome and really maybe not needing to tow a car, but stay tuned on that.
Of course. Now, on the way back down, we stopped and we had dinner at the Fire Mountain Grill, which is really nice because it has outdoor seating on the water. So we had a really pretty table on a deck that overlooked, you know, the river.
No wait for the table.
No, we did. And it was primetime dinner, too. And we sat right down. We had very nice service. They had, you know, the BLTs because everybody does have that.
They had awesome BLTs. Almost as good as the next door gastropub in Port Angeles.
Yeah, I wanted a steak. I was so in the mood for steak, and they were out of like their Flatiron steak or something.
Poor girl. So did you get the chicken dumplings?
No, I ended up getting the prawn basket.
Oh, the coconut prawn basket.
Yeah.
And how is that on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, 7. It was good. It was, you know, but I wanted a steak.
Great burgers. And I'm sorry, like something like in Washington State, they're into their burgers, right? So you could get the Bigfoot burger, which was, we didn't try it, but to me seemed like a poor knockoff of the Sasquatch burger, okay, out there in Port Angeles. And they had lots of other kind of weird and unique burgers. Now, we got some great desserts, and we learned a lesson about buying dessert with our three boys at nice restaurants. And
which we never do. They always just get some vanilla ice cream if they want it, or we get ice cream somewhere else. Well, but the waitress went said like chocolate lava cake, and the boys' eyes all got really big.
Lava, you know,
and
like
they were
the word lava.
Oh, chocolate lava cake, which we all know what that is. It's the chocolate cake with like the gooey center in the middle. Well, she brings them all. They all got a chocolate lava cake. She brings it all out. Those things are really rich. They each had a
few
bites.
They were like $5 each.
And then we get the bill, and we're like, oh my gosh, we just spent.
Just upped the bill.
So
and
I
they
looked
hardly,
at you,
they
and
hardly
I said,
finished them.
No, because it was too rich. It was too much. And I looked at you, and I said, they are not allowed to order off the dessert menu ever again.
Right.
That's
but I don't get my Mountain Berry Cobbler in that scenario.
You can. And they can have vanilla ice cream.
No. Okay. That might work.
Yeah.
That might work. It was a really solid meal. And it's really one of the only shows in town
on
your way down.
And it was a nice view. It was a nice place to end the day. I would highly recommend stopping there after you've like done a packed lunch. I think that's a nice combination.
Absolutely.
For the day.
So those are the things we did on the west side of Mount St. Helens. We're going to come back in a second. We're going to talk about the south side, which the boys liked more. Okay. I mean, it was awesome. If you go to Mount St. Helens, you need to plan a one-day trip on the south side as well, or you're not getting the full experience. So stay tuned. We're going to take you into the ape caves. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment 3 of our big greetings from Mount St. Helens adventure. And this is going to be on the south side of Mount St. Helens and all the things that we did there. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Cabela's. And we used some Cabela's gear on the south side of Mount St. Helens, that's for sure.
Cabela's has everything your family needs to get into the great outdoors and camp in comfort. Before we left for this trip, we talked about our gear for the Pacific Northwest. And we talked about our awesome Cabela's Rainy River Gore-Tex raincoats. Well, it turns out we had absolutely no rain during our entire trip, but we did bust these out for our very chilly hike down in the Ape Caves, which we'll talk about.
That's the only time I wore it.
Yeah.
You wore it in Fern Canyon as well in the Redwoods.
I wore it a few times,
we'll
and the boys wore it a few times too. But really, it was a nice layer, a light layer to keep warm, really as like a windbreaker instead of a raincoat. But we used them in the Ape Caves. So you can check out Cabela's full line of affordable gear at Cabela's.com. Cabela's, it is in your nature.
All right, so the entire reason we went to the South Side was to do the Ape Caves. Okay, now, you know, if you're a listener of our podcast, that our boys love Rock the Park. Stephanie and I both love Rock the Park. And by the way, Jack from Rock the Park followed us on Instagram. And that was a moment.
The boys,
they
like
were so excited.
They're fanboys, totally, of
well,
them.
We dropped Jack a message saying, look, you inspired us to go to the Ape Caves. I think it was something like that.
We tagged him on Instagram.
And he followed us back. And like Max and Theo were really excited. And I have to say again, I love that Jack and Colton from Rock the Park are role models for my boys.
Right. And that's what they're doing. That's why we're so impressed with the Rock the Park project. Is look at what it does. They did a show on the Ape Caves. Okay, now what are these? Let's talk about it before people are like, what are you talking about, the Ape Caves? These are lava tubes. Okay, so you know, these are tunnels, caves that were carved out by lava, you know, over eruptions in Mount St. Helens in the past. These are not from the 1980s eruption. These actually were discovered back in the late 1950s by a farmer who almost fell down.
In his tractor, right?
Yeah.
Like his tractor like almost rode into them.
Right. And then what happened was they were explored by a local outdoors group. It wasn't a Boy Scout. It was like an outdoors group called the Ape, you know.
Right. It was like some local exploring group.
Yeah. So that's where they got the name, because they started to guide people down into the tunnels.
And teach them about the tunnels and conserving them, which is
exactly.
So cool.
Yeah. So now what you can do is go down and you can actually hike them. So our boys saw Jack and Colton do that on Rock the Park, and that shot to the top of their list for things to do while we were in the area. And I have to be honest, I don't know that we would have driven over an hour.
I don't think so. I think the episode of Rock the Park made us put this on the map. Now, there are two caves that you can hike through, okay? There's the lower cave and the upper cave. Now, on the episode of Rock the Park, Jack and Colton do the more strenuous and complicated upper cave, okay? That's 1.5 miles one way. Then you walk back through the forest. It is more physically challenged, and you're doing a lot of climbing and squeezing around rocks. We decided
right.
that was not okay for Wesley, that he would not like that. He was scared
right.
enough just going into the caves. But I would really recommend to check out that episode of Rock the Park, and you can see that whole upper cave.
Yeah, and if it were just Max and Theo, we could have done that also with them. I think that they would have been okay with it. But definitely with the four-year-old, we were like, this is not the time to be experimenting.
Return trip.
Yeah.
Return trip.
Exactly. For
now,
next time.
We did the lower cave, which I think most families with kids, with younger kids for sure, will want to do. If you have teenagers who are adventurous, go do the upper caves like Jack and Colton. Now, we did the lower cave. It's 1.5 miles round trip. It's easy.
There's nothing
physically strenuous about it. It just happens to be maybe scary if you're claustrophobic. And
you walk underground.
You're underground. And the ceiling's
it's
high
pitch
above
black.
You. But it never gets that tight. I mean, look at our photo on Instagram. It's a big cave. It's also 42 degrees. And it's just weird and spooky being in a lava tunnel. And frankly, you know, like Max and Theo are like, well, is it going to erupt? I mean, is lava going to come? I mean, that's what like an 8-year-old's thinking down here.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, you're talking about something where lava did flow. And it was unbelievable. I happen to have a little bit of a claustrophobic edge to me. But then at the same time, I'm always really like, I'm never going to let my fears keep me from an amazing experience with my kids. Like, that's always something that I like push myself past. And I knew that this would be special. In fact, this is their favorite thing on this entire trip.
I know.
This is the first thing they tell every single person, when they ask them what their favorite thing on the trip is, they say the ape caves because it was cool. They were underground. Cool.
It is always 42 degrees there.
Now, Wes was nervous when we first walked down. We had to rent. You have to rent a lantern or show that you have a light source. There's actually somebody who's checking before people go down. And I saw one guy go, oh, I'm fine. And the woman goes, you can't see. You're not fine. You need to get a light.
And you can't rely on the light of others.
No.
I mean, it was a crowded day there, but there are moments where you would be in the pitch black.
Right. So you can rent the lantern, really affordable, $5.
And I want to say this. Every guidebook I read said that you had to have 2 light sources per person. That's just not true. When you go there and they rent the lanterns, I believe they say the lanterns are for up to four people.
She gave us one. She was like, you're fine with one.
And it was. I mean, Theo and I also had headlamps that we used, and our family was totally fine.
I would recommend making sure every child has a light source. I think that it would make them feel better about the whole experience.
Not that we did that. But
no, but I'm saying that's what I learned afterwards. I really do think that if Wes had had his own light, he might have felt better.
No, I got really cool pictures in there. And I'm going to just take a second and give you a photography tip. If you put your camera on automatic, it's not going to take pictures down there. It's not going to work. So go into manual, okay, or go into aperture priority. Open up the aperture all the way, as wide as it can possibly be opened, and then crank your ISO. I think I had my ISO at like 2000, and I was able to take pictures in there. I put my focal point on Stephanie's lantern, and I got awesome pictures that I loved. So you're not going to get pictures on automatic. It's too dark. So you're going to have to actually work your camera to get photos down there. And I love the photos from the ape cave.
All right. Now, that is what we did when we went up there. But there are other options in that area. And again, you could really make even more of a great day out of it than we did. In fact, there are a couple of day use recreational areas on the reservoir that you're driving along the entire time as you're going up to the ape caves. And there's all these day use areas where you can go swimming. And it's one of those things I always say. I always bring our bathing suits no matter where we go and towels in the car because I know we've stumbled across great swimming opportunities in the past. Well, today I didn't follow my own rules when we were there. And
it would have been so nice for a swim. We were hot and sweaty. There's Lake Merwin. There's the Yale Reservoir and there's the Swift Reservoir. And I think that there was people swimming at all of them in little sandy beaches.
Yeah.
So you could have chilled out after the hike and swam. Now,
I think that's a great idea.
There are also some other hikes up there that are very popular. There's the Trail of Two Forests, which is hardly a hike. It's just a short interpretive trail, but you get to see, I think, the forest that was affected by lava flow, which is really fascinating. There's also the June Lake Trail. It's 3.2 miles round trip. It goes along a rushing stream and ends up at a nice lake for a picnic lunch. We also discovered a really good place for lunch, which took us by surprise because it did not look like it was going to be a good place for lunch.
Cougar is sort of the biggest town, and it's
not
a big town.
Don't use the word big and cougar in a sentence.
You're not going to have a lot of options.
You blink and you miss cougar.
But we did find the Lone Fir Cafe, all right, which is combined with the Lone Fir Campground.
Which will not be on Campground of the Week
anytime
soon. I mean, it was a really kind of, I'm sorry, I hate to say it. It just was not like a nice looking place.
No, it wasn't.
But the restaurant close to awesome. The food was good. They were friendly. It was so many steps better than what the campground looked like.
Yeah, and Wes wanted pizza, which was nice to be able to order for him because he's difficult with food and it wasn't like we were getting a lot of pizza on our trip. So they had pizza. I was like, okay, Wes, you can get pizza. Well, the pizza was really good.
And so was the BLT.
Surprise!
Bacon!
Service was friendly. The bathrooms were clean. I think that Theo had a club sandwich. Like, it was just a really nice place to have lunch.
And we sat outside.
Yes, exactly. It was a nice outside porch there and everything. So you could do that. Maybe you could do that for dinner, too, on your way back after swimming at the reservoir.
But I certainly think Stephanie's idea is great. Bring the bathing suits, bring a picnic lunch or picnic dinner, and do the ape caves, and then hit one of these places for swimming. You can't miss them. They're right on the side of the road on the way back.
That's what I would do next time. It's funny. This whole trip was very much like, oh, I loved all the things we did, but I would reorganize the order that we did them in, you know, during our days. And I think it would be absolutely
perfect.
But
your rule is a good one, because you never know when you're going to see a great place to swim when you're traveling in a place like the Pacific Northwest or New England or wherever you are. It at any point you could go, oh my God, there's a place to go cliff jumping. Mm-hmm. There's a river to go swimming in. Always bring the bathing suits on a family travel adventure. It's a great tip and we almost always follow it.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, just to wrap it up before we move into our next segment of our news roundup, I just want to say that this should be on everybody's RV destination bucket list. I was just blown away by this. My boys will remember this stop. We were there for 4 days, and my boys will remember this trip for the rest of their lives. I know they will.
You're so right. It's so easily coupled with Olympic National Park. And also, what made it really special for me is the campground discovery that we made. So please head over to Campground of the Week. I adored Silver Cove, and that made the whole experience of Mount St. Helens extra special because we had such a nice campground to come back to at night and relax at.
I was so sad to leave Silver Cove.
Well, we made friends there.
It was our second stop in our trip. We had, what, 3 or 4 stops still ahead of us. And I was like devastated. Like, I was like, I don't want to leave. I want to stay here forever.
But we did 4 nights there and we could have done 5 nights. And I think that most people will think, oh, Mount St. Helens is a 1 night or 2 night stop.
Right. It's a drive-by.
And it's not a drive-by.
Especially not if you're staying at that campground. So please listen to the Campground of the Week, because we had so much fun. They have all the boat rentals there and everything. And we had a whole day at the campground where we just had a wonderful time as a family on the water, using that cabin, meeting nice people. It's a good place, just all around top destination. I'm so glad we ended
up
there.
You are like, there's like nostalgia dripping out of your voice.
I was so happy there. I had a great time.
I did too.
It was the perfect balance of a great relaxing retreat of a campground coupled with really fun experiences that touched me and my kids. And I love that.
And I think that you particularly love when a place takes you by surprise and exceeds your expectations. All right, stay tuned. We're going to come back in a second for the RVFTA News Roundup. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for the RVFTA News Roundup, in which we talk about ourselves. But first, it's time for a sponsored message from Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. One of the pieces of gear that we really missed during our trip to the Pacific Northwest was the Thetford porta potty.
Oh, we could have so used it on the Oregon stop, which will be on next week's show.
Yeah, we have become really attached to it since we started using it over this past camping season. It's great if you're dry camping.
You just said we've become attached to a porta potty. Stephanie likes to snuggle up next to it.
Yeah, that's gross. Or you're camping in a pop-up without, you know, its own bathroom. Or if, like us, you just have kids that have to go to the bathroom all the time.
I want to say something. I don't think it is gross to snuggle up to this Thetford porta potty because it is the way it's designed. It stays remarkably clean. I
can't believe you just said that with a straight face.
I am. So like I would actually pick it up and hug it right now.
To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
Okay, we'll keep the RVFTA News Roundup kind of quick, but we do have a major travel piece out in Trailer Life. I believe it's the August issue of Trailer Life. We just got it in the mail. So if you're interested in Cape Cod, check out Trailer Life.
You should be interested.
We've got a lot of stuff coming out in Trailer Life. We are contributing very regularly to Trailer Life. So if you're not subscribing, you should. Okay, support print publications that cover the RV industry. All right.
And also, we want you to mark on the calendars if you're in the New Mexico area. We are going to be attending the Cabela's grand opening in Albuquerque. Yay! It's on September 23rd and 24th.
No kids.
No,
This is what we call a vacation.
Yeah. We have to get jobs in other places.
I'm so pumped to go to New Mexico. I've never been.
I know. We're very excited.
Albuquerque is supposed to be a very cool town. So please, if you're in that region, come say hello. Plan on attending the Cabela's grand opening. It's exciting news. You're getting a Cabela's. If you're into family camping, if you're into hunting, if you're into fishing, if you're into outdoor adventure of any kind, you're going to have a great Cabela's store.
All right, everybody. That wraps it up for our episode on greetings from Mount St. Helens. Next week, we'll be back with the next stop in our epic Pacific Northwest
greetings
adventure
from the Oregon coast. And again, woo-hoo, I'm excited to do this content because it was an amazing campground and an amazing destination that also took me by surprise.
No missteps on this run. All right, we're going to see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.